Justin, what are we doing for the first time ever?
For the first time in all history, an intentional fatherhood retreat is happening.
And it's happening in Costa Mesa, February 19th through 21st. And the coolest part about this is that you're all invited. Every single father and man you know, invite them out. It's going to be a great time. What can people expect?
It is going to be fun.
Yes.
First of all, there's going to be a ton of talks and teaching on spiritual and physical formation and fatherhood.
Sir.
We're going to do curated times to hang out with other dads who are seeking Jesus, just like you are. And honestly, it's just a chance to get away, which is one of the things that is the most important for dads in this stage of life, to get away and reflect on where life is headed and how they're walking with Jesus in it.
Yes. Couldn't have said it better. So join us in Costa Mesa, California, February 19th through 21st, and check out early bird pricing. That's a big deal. It's happening right now. Go to intentionalfatherhood.org to check that all out, or you can check us out on social. But come, we can't wait to see you in February.
We want to meet you in person. Please come.
Welcome to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast, where we give you a strong biblical framework and lots of practical ideas on how to live intentionally as a father and a husband. I'm Brooke Moser.
And I'm Justin Whitmore Early, and we're your hosts to guide you through the many roles and challenges that God is calling you to live intentionally as a father. We're following a visual framework that you can check out at intentionalfatherhood.org, and it's going to help you break down fatherhood into 8 callings.
And in each one, we're going to talk about how God made you to be a father and what practical habits you can start trying today in order to live intentionally into that call.
So come along with us as we follow Jesus on this journey towards being more intentional fathers.
Welcome back to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast. We are here, Justin and I, the final episode of the season. We have made it. If you stuck in this long, we just want to say thank you so much for joining us in this journey and the framework of this season and your fatherhood, Lord willing, and our prayer is that it is blessed by this content and the conversations it hopefully creates in your home. We just got to say it. You got questions and we have responses, not answers. We don't have answers to everything, but we have responses.
Brooke taught me that Q&A should be Q&R. And I'm still debating. I think I like it. We don't necessarily have an answer for everything, but we can respond. Anything.
And the reason I say that around the topic of parenting and marriage and fatherhood is because it's so nuanced. And an answer for me might not be actually helpful for you, depending upon your situation, kids, dynamic. So that's where that comes in. But anyway, if you have a question, all you got to do is send a 1-minute voice memo with your name, where you're from, to hello@intentionalfatherhood.org. We would love to get the questions for this season, and we're going to respond just like we did with season one. Really excited.
We'd love to play your voice memo on air and respond to it.
It was so fun. That was so fun responding to those.
Yeah, no, I love doing it.
I was loving it.
I love hearing people.
And then all of our community, you know, I want to say it. Please just rate. That's pushing the button. Subscribe. That's also pushing a button. These things take at least 3 seconds. You know, I would say a comment a little bit more, but not much more. I mean, not much more. 30 seconds maybe.
I'm going to say it costs you almost nothing.
Yeah.
And it gives listeners so much.
Yes.
Because then they hear about it and then they listen.
So do that, please. And then social media at intentionalfatherhood_. And then obviously you can follow Justin or myself or all the different various things that we do. So please do that. Today we are wrapping up season 2 of the podcast. And we are on the topic, as you heard last episode, giving our deaths away. And we talked a lot of concepts. I mean, that conversation, I don't know about you, Justin. I think we know.
I really enjoyed our last one. Yeah.
Yeah, I did too.
And this is really an extenuation of the last
episode. And I want to, but to be fair, different as well and highly practical. So this is not repeated content as per usual. You guys know that. Okay.
Great.
We wouldn't be in for that.
We would never do that.
We would hate that. But that said, I think we want to get to a place where we're talking about a big word that we need to break down what it means. And that's the word legacy. So Justin, why don't you start us today?
Yeah. This is one of the things that we get the most questions on.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually one of the things that I get the most questions on. And it's almost always from men. It's almost always from fathers. They're thinking about legacy. At least the ones who are thinking are, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if you're thinking about legacy, you're on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us are wondering and have a lot of questions about it. If you're not thinking about legacy, you're not on the right track. Like you need to think about it. You do need to think about it. But I think the common thing here is we have more questions than
answers. Mm-hmm. Lots of dads, including myself, want to know, what are other people doing to leave a legacy for their kids? Mm. Okay. And so we want to honor that question best as we can by giving you as many ideas as we can, mm-hmm. with all humility of what we caveated last episode. And that is that, you know, we're 39 and 40 and we're in the smack middle of this giving your life away stage. We're trying to practice for and start and think about giving our death away. But that means you're at the right time to start thinking about this.
Yes.
The next season is too late to think about this. Mm-hmm. So right now, we were mentioning this I think we were at lunch, I can't remember, but our kids think that we're old now, right? So they think, they are looking at what they perceive, you know, an older man to be.
Oh, dude, my kids call me old now.
Yeah. And when they get older, they'll realize, oh my gosh, dad was young when he was parenting me. But we are a legacy to them now.
Yes.
And so I think about this all the time. Somebody once reminded me, your kids see you as the expert in everything when they're young.
Yep.
Before their adolescence, and they see you as the expert in nothing, as we mentioned. So now is the time where you can start to really think about, mm-hmm. what are the lessons I want to pass on? What are the key family maxims? What is the vision of the early family or the Moser family? What are the big spiritual concepts that we say, this, our family, as for me and my household, you know, we will serve the Lord. We do this.
24-15, baby.
Yeah, this is tradition. This is legacy. And I have found it very helpful to frame this conversation in terms of initiations. Now that's male initiations, rituals. This is because I'm thinking a lot about raising boys and turning them into men. This is not limited to a boy conversation, though, but it is particularly relevant to a male conversation, and we're mostly talking to fathers here. We desperately need to be initiated into the next stage by the men ahead of us that are in that stage. Mm. Like we desperately need to be called forward. And whether or not we need to become the kind of men who do that for our sons and for our daughters. Mm. And this is what I think is really neat about the legacy and initiation conversation, is that it ties this season, it ties these stages together, mm-hmm. because just think of right now how we're talking. We're smack in the middle of the give your life away stage. We're mm-hmm. learning how to sacrifice. We're learning how to be there for our family. We're learning that that is sanctifying and making us more like Christ. Mm-hmm. Part of that is starting to prepare for the give your death away stage. As we've been thinking about in the last episode, what does it look like to start to think in terms of life is time bound. I won't have forever. What lessons do I want to leave? A great way to do that is to be doing initiation for your kids, which is to call them into the first stage of saying, I need to teach you what it's like to get your life together. So you're starting to give your life away, and then you're learning about giving your death away, and you're doing that by initiating the young into getting their life together. And there's this, this is, I think, a beautiful cycle of fatherhood and fathers passing on the wisdom to their children. So that's why we're going to talk about legacy, and that's why we're going to do it a lot through the practices of initiating people into legacy. But I don't think it's super helpful to talk about all the nitty-gritty practices before we go through the super important spiritual side of this, that is, before you practice, you need to pray.
Yeah.
Just almost always in life.
Yeah.
Almost always in life, you know, you prayer usually needs to be the first practice.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And you have challenged me, Brooke, in talking about praying legacy for your kids. I do lots of little prayers with my kids. Happy and proud of our family culture around prayer.
Yes.
But I really like how you're thinking more deeply about praying. I don't like big future, big stuff.
Yeah.
So let me let you kick it off with praying legacy before we talk about practices of legacy.
Yeah, I think praying legacy, I think that means it's important. Like, it's that vision piece that we talked about in the blessing. Like, let's quick call back to the last episode. Like, there's a blessing piece we'll talk about. And we went into great detail last episode. But I think when we pray in legacy, I think what we're praying into is the types of kids that we want, that we envision our kids to be. You know what I'm saying? And when we're praying legacy, I think a way to say that is we often make legacy about us, meaning like we're just talking to like, what is my legacy? Well, legacy is of course maybe initiated by you and what is your legacy? But we also give legacy in the sense of like, who are the kids that I have and who do they become? Well, that's hugely your, it's your biggest legacy. So it's very important that you're thinking through what type of person God's asking you to form and help form.
Yes.
And you can't do that on your own. Like, I don't know about you, but I have no skills enough wisdom to do that on my own.
And I often think about how praying refines your desires, right?
Yes.
Praying
absolutely
puts a lens on what do I really want? So the idea of beginning your desires of what do I want in legacy by praying for it is just not just brilliant, but it's the way the Lord often works.
Yes, absolutely. So I've thought about it a lot, but I just find it like for me, it's the tangible like thing I can do. Cause sometimes I feel overwhelmed by this idea, like pray legacy, what the heck does that mean? Well, thinking about what to pray and topics to pray over has been something that for me has given me like a real footing and like, it gives me like and maybe it's just to make myself feel better, but I actually don't think so. I think it's more than that. I think God actually really wants to, he's really invested in helping you form who your kids become.
As you said that, it suddenly struck me that actually this is super practical and helpful because I think a lot of guys, including myself, think about like, how do I leave a legacy? It's enormously open question.
It's too big.
And saying, well, first you pray it is actually a really helpful, practical answer.
Yeah.
And it made me think, there's two things at least I can remember my dad praying a lot.
Mm.
He still does.
Yeah.
I often, when he's like praying for a family meal or like, and I remember this when I was young, maybe at bedtimes, I can't remember. He would often pray that I would grow up or that my brother, I would hear him say this, you know, may they grow up to be the man or woman you've created them to be.
Mm.
And I haven't thought about this. I don't think I've ever named this, but I'm thinking that was his one small way of constantly praying legacy and saying, I want my kids to grow up to be the man that Jesus made them to be. I actually don't entirely know what that is.
Yeah.
But I pray, Lord, over and over. And I listened to him pray that. Like I pray that for my kids now.
Yes.
And he also always pray, may they be, often when people are away, like if we're praying at family lunch, for example, and somebody's not there, he'll pray, you know, keep them close to you and in love with you.
Wow.
And that idea of, I think his goal for us, the legacy that he was dreaming of, which I now know only because I heard him praying it, was that we would become who God made us to be. And that was near to God and in love with God. That's pretty cool. And I've actually never thought about that before.
So right now.
But it was his prayers. Cool. And I mean, I'm sure you're talking about, I think, prayers we pray both in front of our kids, but also just alone, right?
Yes, absolutely. And especially alone. I think that most people that are what you would deem as successful in life or in general, especially around anything spiritual, have had a private prayer life. Anybody I know,
you could say that twice. Yep.
Anybody I know that is in any way successful, as you would see it in the kingdom and in reality, has had a private prayer life. Even a bunch of people that would maybe say they're not overtly Christian have some form of communication with what they would say God is. I think
like
it's
a
just,
reflective life. Or
absolutely.
Like, and you mentioned it early in the season, like God as. Did you say fuel? I can't remember, but like God,
you were
fuel, you're made to run
on God,
on Jesus. Like
you're made by God for God, which means you're made to need God and you're made to run on God. And that's the truth. Like we are made to run on that energy. And so if you're every day, like just expending and never refilling, I mean, it's obviously pretty black and white. And so to get really practical, like I think something that I know that has been exciting for me to just think through is like, how do I do this? And I want to make this easy for like fathers, especially. I want to make it super simple. And so.
So I'm pumped because I now have a resource sitting on my desk that you gave me. Tell them about it.
It's been cool. Like I was thinking through just practically, like, I just want to, it was literally in a moment of like, I just want to know, like, I just want to do something. I want to pray for my kids. And so I wrote a really short devotional. It's a 31-day prayer devotional. But if you're here, if you're hearing this and you're seeing this, this book is called Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers.
Beautifully bound and laid out.
You can see it.
Yeah.
Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. And it's about, each day is about 1 minute, guys. I'm like telling you it's 1 minute. And here's what it is. It's a quote from someone who's usually long gone. And it's a scripture, so you can be meditating on scripture. And then simply it is a prayer, a written out prayer that you can borrow, not to feel, you know, depressed by or overwhelmed by. Like you can borrow this prayer, make it your own. Make it your own words.
Best way to pray. Can I read one?
Yeah, oh yeah, read one. Pick one and read one. And we can do it so quickly, but I want to give you an example of this. Let me give you a couple of details while you're looking that up, Justin.
Wait, this is amazing. I opened it.
Yeah.
And here's a quote by Rollheiser. If you don't pray,
yes,
you will either be habitually depressed
or obsessed
with your own ego.
Yep. I love that one.
Wow. We were just talking about this and kind of a theme of the season.
The spirit in many ways. So what the hope was with this was I wanted to write something that was encouraging, but simple and really honestly, like something to have as a tactile thing to use. So if you're hearing this and you're like, gosh, where do I start? Honestly, the whole point of this was I was thinking of dads that are super busy, guys like Justin, who also has, you know, you've got so many multiple parts. I have so many things moving in a day. I want language that I can borrow from other people that have thought this through. Now, cool. Last thing about this is there's 31 days. So there's 31 topics. So my heart was like,
so this is like, do it for a month.
Do it for a month with your spouse. Do it together. Do it each month. But the one thing that I want to highlight is each day has a different topic. Here, go to the, because I haven't memorized them. Maybe just give us a couple of the.
Yeah, I'm opening it. I love this because you gave this to me, but I haven't opened it yet. And anything, I want to go on record saying this. Anything that I can work into a 10-minute quiet time, I'm for. Because
yes,
often, like, that's what I have. I would love to do more. That's what I have. Introduction, how should I use this devotional prayer of surrender before doing it? And then 31.
Just one of the topics. Yeah. Give a couple of the topics.
Emotional healing, good reputation, sexual integrity, prayer life, judging others, doing good in all the ways you can, anxiety, soul friends. Ooh, I want to read about that one.
Yeah.
Commitment, full commitment, strong in the spirit, time.
So,
all right, hold on. Yeah. Time seems like the one we should read for this one. Say what you're going to say and then I'm going to read it.
Yeah. So just to highlight, the idea was that over those 31 days, of course, it's not going to cover every topic that your child could experience. But the hope was to capture in 1 month, you praying over your kids about all these topics that honestly never naturally come to even my mind. Mm-hmm. It's only through the process of thinking it through and processing and praying. So this is a resource. It's not on Amazon, by the way. We wanted to bind it and make it beautiful. And so we're actually selling it on our website, intentionalparents.org, link in the website. And also it will be on intentionalfatherhood.org. You can pick it up there. And that's the only place to buy it right now because we're on purpose. We didn't want to have, you know, outsource the printing. We wanted to make it a gift so that you can be proud to leave it out.
Yeah, and this looks like a coffee table book or like a...
Yeah,
a
that was the idea. It's like something that you can leave out and reminder. And why we wanted you to leave it out is because of this. Visual cues are massive.
Yeah.
When you see something see this, the hope is that you go, oh, I get to pray for my kids and it only takes a minute. So that's the idea. You can go check that out at any point.
So this one looks like a prayer for legacy. So I'm going to do time.
Okay. This is a whole day right here.
The way to love anything is to realize that it may be lost. G.K. Chesterton, which,
oof,
wow, okay, that's a great, we're literally talking about this. This is giving your death away, like yes, realizing that life absolutely is time capped. Verse, Psalm 90, 12, teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Providence is at work here. Again, this is on point. All right, here's the prayer. Father, time is something that you created, but does not confine you. Our lives are finite with timestamps and expiration dates. I ask first that you would help me think of the precious commodity of time with sober judgment. Mm. Second, I ask for my child that you would teach them to number their days and that they would have the wisdom to spend their time on this earth wisely. I ask that there would be a certain awareness of the power of time and that you would help me be a good steward of the time that I have left. May time not intimidate, but instead motivate my child to act wisely and thoughtfully throughout their life. Would my child be one in this generation who uses their time to bring glory to you and blessing to others? Amen.
Amen.
That's beautiful. That's a great flavor of like, wow, that's, yeah, ways to pray legacy for your
So that's one
kids.
Of a,
that's
of,
awesome.
Of a million resources, but why this was just something that I was passionate about putting together was for the everyday dad that is in the space of needing some help with this. We all need help with this. And so this is for you. So check that out if that's helpful. But that's where you can start. It's a great mm-hmm. place to start in the sense of just beginning to pray legacy in, because again, we don't, it's really hard to always remember to pray, to think about, you know, oftentimes, unless I'm like sitting down and slowing down enough and, you know, honestly, not distracted very much and have everything away from me, that's the only time when like these things that are of deeper importance bubble to the surface mm-hmm. to even think about praying about.
Yeah.
And so I've found my life has been so radically changed by borrowing prayers of old.
Oh, yeah.
And borrowing other people's prayers or borrowing someone else's experience and understanding it to make it my own. And so yeah. the hope with this is to do that, to take it into each day, try it for 31 days. And then my only like challenge to you men is do it for 31 days. Takes a minute, honestly, not a lot. Do it right before bed if you want. Do it in the morning, whenever you can do it. And then just actively and curiously watch what the Spirit does in your child mm. and in your home. And honestly, even in your heart. That's my only challenge. Like be aware of what might be happening through your prayers.
I love that. There was a time in my life where I was down on praying other people's prayers because mm-hmm. I felt like prayer should always be sort of spontaneous and heartfelt. And I think I linked heartfelt with spontaneous. Like it wasn't heartfelt if it wasn't spontaneous. I've radically shifted my position now. But I remember there's some Latin phrase I can't remember, but it's roughly equivalent to pray your prayers until your prayers pray you,
yes.
or let your prayers pray you. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the wisdom of praying other people's prayers is that you're being formed by them. So you are praying them. You yes. are asking God, but you're also changing as you read other people's language. Yes. And I think now I'm a huge fan of praying the same prayers over and over because yeah. I want to be formed by those prayers as yeah. much as I want to feel yeah. those prayers. So I love that idea.
They activate your mind yeah. and curiously. So I think we start by praying legacy.
Praying legacy, yeah.
And that's a huge practical one.
So I would... the next category I'd submit is writing legacy.
Yes.
I've shared about this before. One of my traditions is writing letters to my children at least once a year. And so we have a birthday tradition where I take them out around their birthday morning and we do a really special breakfast, which like just means going to IHOP and ordering hot chocolate and sprinkles on the pancakes.
Yeah, yeah.
Now my oldest son now has like good tastes.
Oh, so
we go to a restaurant downtown called Pearly's. It's this Jewish deli. Incredible mm. breakfast. And, but we'll order a big breakfast and I'll always bring my journal. Okay. And I'll ask them some 10 to 20 fun questions, like starting with like just stuff like, who's your best friend right now? What do you love doing right now? What's your favorite food? Like, what's your favorite family meal right now? To more serious questions, who's a problem for you right now? What are you worried about right now? When you lay down in bed, what are you anxious about? What do you have bad dreams about? To then some spiritual questions of, every year I ask them, when you picture God, what face is he making?
That's a good question.
What do you, I ask them what they pray about. Even at four, I'm like, what do you pray about? And they're like, I don't. And I'm like, that's okay. You know, but I'm just going to keep asking you this question.
Let's start there.
And I'll jot down their answers. So it's sort of like, in exchange for getting bought whatever you want off the menu, you have to talk to me. And I write down all these things. And then that night, though, honestly, often it's like a couple weeks later, I will take that interview session and I'll write them a letter and I'll say, so this is where we went. This is what you ordered. Here's what you said. Here's who you're hanging out with. Here's what you cared about at that time. But then like I'll shift, so like half cool. of the letter is that, but then my whole commitment in these letters is that then I stop telling them about them and I start telling them about me. So like, here's what our family is doing this year. Here's what I'm worried about this year. Here's what I'm struggling with. Here's what your mom and I are talking about. And I'm thinking, this is what I'm thinking, Brooke, I'm not writing a letter to a child. I'm writing a letter to a man because I'm not going to give them these letters until... I don't know when they're going to need it. If they need it at 16, I'll give it to them then. But I'm thinking more like 18, 20, 25, maybe when they get married, something. It's like, hey, here's a little bit of our legacy. You know, we've had conversations for years and And these are things
that is going to be so cool.
Yeah,
that I hope so. Such a cool
but
idea.
Again, like kind of like the praying, love it forms that. Me as much as I hope it will one day form them. Because I think part of developing legacy is beginning to learn how to talk to your children as brothers in Christ, not just as fathers and children. Right now we're fathers, like they're little, you know. But I mean, your guy's 16. Oh, like, dude, you know, you're starting, like, I want to build the pattern of speaking to them and trying to pass on things. Just another quick idea on that. I was asking a friend about wine recommendations because I want to get my kids a bottle of wine from the date of their birth.
Yes.
To open with them maybe on their 21st birthday or maybe again at their wedding or something to another little moment of like legacy. Like I've owned this bottle for 15, 20 years. I've been waiting for you for 15, 20 years to sit down with you. And I asked my good friend at the gym, who is a sommelier and a restaurant owner, I was like, what would be a good vintage from like these years? And he was like, I love this idea, by the way. I do this. And here's what he's done. Like this one-ups.
Oh, I can't wait to hear. Give it to me.
Yeah. So this is a sommelier talking, okay? Like, and for any of you who don't, I'm sure most people know that word, but I didn't at one point. It's, it's like a professional wine taster, drinker. They know. Yes. You know, they know everything about it. He buys a case of wine. He has two sons. So he's bought a case of wine from each of their birth years. And so I can't remember. It's like 15.
I don't know how many.
12, 15, 18 bottles. I think it depends on the case. But he writes a letter, or he's working on it. This is a long-term project. A letter for each of the bottles. So 12 to 15, 18 letters. And one is for when you turn 21. One is for when you get married. And then another one's for when you lose your job for the first time. Another one's for when you get broken up with. Another one's for when you turn 40. Another one's for when you're, you know, a friend dies. And then the last one is like, this is the one that you're going to, this is the bottle you're going to drink and the letter you're going to read at my funeral. Oh. And I'm like, oh, dude.
Holy goodness.
And I thought it was such a neat idea.
Take that idea, guys.
I thought it was such a good idea to steal. And you know, maybe you like wine, maybe you don't, maybe you want to attach it to something else. Maybe you don't. I'm a big fan of bottles. I shared about this in Made for People of like writing a year on a bottle to share with a friend, because I just think, you know, these things that age over time.
Yes.
Well, like a fine wine are like a good friendship, a good relationship with your kid. And so I love the idea of letter writing, passing down. So if either of those help you,
I love those are good
find
ideas.
A way to write letters to your children as a way to start thinking through legacy now.
Such a really strong practical idea. I don't have anything to add. I'm just processing in real time, like what are some of the things I want to keep doing and do.
And by the way, that reminded me, I didn't start this like at age zero. You know, I started this somewhere in the middle of zero to 10 years. Suddenly I was like, I want to do this. So if you're like, well, my kids are eight, this old, like your kid is not going to be mad if you start this when they're 15. They're going to love it. You know,
that's a great reminder. So
you haven't missed anything. Wherever you are is the right place to start talking about legacy. Don't think about, I've missed so much. Right now is the right time to start thinking about it.
Fathers, we are so excited to let you know of two resources that myself and Justin have been working on. First, Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth is available exclusively right now at intentionalparents.org or intentionalfatherhood.org. It is a 31-day guide to help you pray and focus with consistency on your family, your children, helping shape their hearts while God shapes yours. And of course, you've heard about it. Justin's resource, his new book, The Body Teaches the Soul, is available everywhere books are sold. This book is about the 10 essential habits that build a healthy and holy life, habits that strengthen how you lead your home. So we want to just encourage you, if you have not grabbed those resources and those are helpful, please take a moment, get those now, and let's get back to today's episode. You know, I have it's a weird dynamic for me to think about legacy because, you know, personally, my dad's already gone. He was 53 when he died. No, he was 57. I apologize. 57. And I think it is so interesting because I didn't grow up in a world or home that ever even considered, talked about, or thought of this word. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of parts of me that are excited about having this conversation, but in very real time, I'm just like, it makes me feel very uncomfortable because I still haven't done a lot of work around thinking about all, I've thought about some of the things, but I think there's so much more that I could think of and do. And at the very same time, I would tell myself what I hope to tell you is, and what you just said, start where you are, not where you're not. Like, doesn't matter if you had an example of this or not, like you can start now. And I think the point really is, and this is a reminder for me in real time, like be more intentional and thoughtful about the legacy piece of your life. And I think even for me right now, there's that weird turn of, you know, I'm turning from one decade to the next. There's a lot of reflective moments when you jump into the next decade. And you're like, oh yeah, now I'm 40. Now I'm technically in that space where people go,
yes,
wow, you should have your life together. You know,
dude,
you should be giving your life away.
Well, the age chart or a 40th birthday. I actually did this the morning of my 40th. What I asked for was a morning alone. I sound like your wife, right?
Yeah, I want to be alone. She had 4 days alone.
And I did a lot of just visioning and planning and saying, what do I hope to be true of me when I'm 55? That was that was all the time horizon I wanted to consider then. I just, how do I want to spend the next decade and a half? That sort of reflective practice is a part of doing legacy. You need to be thinking about your own life if you're going to be able to pass your life on.
Yes.
Now, that's it. I want to encourage you in a way that you encouraged me last time.
All right, I'm ready.
You, probably like many other people, are saying, oh, you know, I don't know how to do this. I haven't been doing this. This is big stuff. Like, maybe you feel more guilty than motivated or more empty than full of ideas.
Spot on.
But when we talk about practicing legacy, a lot of this is actually smaller moments in more ordinary things that nonetheless are treasures to pass on. So I know you've been doing this because you were just telling me like, oh, I was given Duke an instruction this summer, like, you know, you need a new morning routine. And I can think of things with Wit. Like recently I gave Wit, my oldest son this summer, his first dumb phone. And it was a moment, it was a ritual of like, we're going through 10 things that we are together going to commit to in using technology. Mm-hmm. And I think of like morning routines, how to use a phone, how to ask a girl out.
Oh, dude, I did that too. That's all happening.
Conversations about sex.
Yes.
Little stuff like how to drive. Even these, we talked about it last time, right? Like I'm blanking on that, not crystallized knowledge, but fluid.
Fluid, yeah.
Knowledge.
Fluid intelligence.
Fluid intelligence, like just how to do stuff in life.
Yes, yeah.
These are actually, you do not have to think really big and really abstract to think about legacy.
Yeah.
A huge part of your legacy is getting in the grit of teaching your children how to get their life together, right? We're back to stage one.
Yep.
When you do that, you're leaving legacy because you're present in the moment and saying, well, this is how, this is what a man does in this, or this is what an adult does. So I feel like you should share about that. Like, what'd you tell Duke about his morning routine? What'd you tell him about how to ask a girl out? Like,
oh, thanks.
Cause I got some for Wit and my son Asher too.
Well, thanks for the encouragement. I receive it. I mean, it's all happened really quick. I mean, lots of things. I think it's really interesting to think through how we pass these things down. One of the things that morning routine, he just was like doing what any teenager does. Like he just woke up and kind of just went into the day without thinking, started listening to music, you know? And it's that weird stage where it's like, we're starting to exercise independence, but you're also like, that's not a helpful thing. That's dumb. We shouldn't do that. You know? So you're trying to just guide. And it was so interesting because I'm thinking like, I'm looking at his life. He also went from a dumb phone, because he's now driving, to an iPhone. Now it's locked down. We have all sorts of things on it.
And this is it.
This is when he turns 16,
right? 16. Because we're on the same page. This is worth talking about. Not right now.
Yes.
But a huge, huge value of both of ours is withhold the smartphone initiation until 16. But then initiate them.
Yes.
Teach them what to do. Pause. I'll talk about that later. You keep going on the morning routine.
Yeah. We need to talk about that because that's big. And honestly, it felt really awkward for him for that first like year of high school and like... anytime I text people, it's green. I was like, but son, you've got blue energy.
we're going to go here.
We'll go here.
I'm not going to distract you, but this is a big conversation. So, this is an initiation.
So there's phone, there's driving, there's girlfriend. All of this has happened within, you know, a couple months of each other. And so, you know, I could just let him be and figure it out. But I was also like, dude, your morning routine is not strong. And any man that has any sort of success in life or has any sort of, you know, ability to actually move through the world in a successful way has any chance needs to have some sort of morning routine.
And by the way, it probably includes prayer. Like I said,
exactly. So I gave him a menu and I said, you can pick from these and you can decide order, but these things happen before anything else. And so, and they were simple. It was, you need to either read or listen to scripture. I don't care whichever is more preferable to you. Cause he wakes up, drinks coffee. He loves coffee. So he wakes up, makes like nice coffee. We have a whole espresso machine, makes nice coffee, Americano for himself. And then Bible. He asked like, after Bible, can I like read the news? And I was like, sure, old man, that's fine. Like, go ahead.
I love that. But I also love, as long as it's the Bible first, there's a huge.
Oh, it's massive.
Because I talk to adults about this all the time. You go to the news first.
You're done.
The first thing. You're
done.
It's going to mess you up.
You're toast. So that was my only order structure. It's just like that comes first. And then your room needs to be clean and you need to exercise. And exercise.
Gosh, I love this, dude.
Well, and exercise is a little different because it's like, hey, we can put it, you know, this is summertime. It was like, well,
you can put it in the morning of the day.
Put it anywhere in the day. But in the morning, I was like, you can do this in the morning. You need to. Yeah. You're not getting to it in the day. So these are like important things for a man. And then with school, you know, it's like, hey, you can do it after. You can do it before. You decide. But like having a clean room. Things in order. So your mind and heart, you know, that reading the scriptures, moving your body. These are essential things that I'm hoping to instill in him to say, whether you like doing this day one or day two or not, this is throughout generations, but also in my own life and experience and every other man that I know, a key part of their thriving mm-hmm. in adulthood and life. And so you need a new morning routine, but son, you can pick how you want the order to go. Outside of the scriptures, but that needs to happen before you're putting your AirPods in, listening to your music or playing guitar. Like that's what happens.
You know? Brother, I think this is far more significant than you realized. I mean,
maybe it is.
No, so many guys are listening. Their dad didn't teach them the power of like how to structure a day.
Yeah.
Or the wisdom of like, hey, praying, reading the word needs to be part of your routine. Exercise needs to be part of your routine. And you're saying there's both. You're passing on this.
Yes.
I mean, this is enormous. And I will actually.
Yes.
I will lift thanks for my parents and particularly my dad here. Lauren was reminding me earlier as we were talking about this, that I stand on the shoulders of giants because my parents were so good at so much of what they did. I mean, so many people I meet have parents who are broken in so many ways, and all of our parents are broken in many ways.
Sure, sure.
But I recognize I'm particularly blessed by a mom and dad who loved Jesus, loved each other, loved us, and were relatively emotionally healthy.
Yes.
Like I cannot describe, you know, the way that I feel like I get to stand on the shoulders of giants, the things I get to do and see because of what they did for me.
Yes.
And one of those was most days when I would come upstairs, I would see my dad in his study reading the Bible.
Wow.
So he told me I should do that.
Yeah.
But he also showed me. It was just normal. Like I think back now and I intuited, this is what a man does. A man starts his day in the word. Oof. And that's been a huge part of my life, you know, not necessarily always what I do.
Yes.
But always an intuition of,
it's what's right and
this
good.
This is what's right and good and I ought to be doing. And not in a guilty way, but just in a way of, if you're confused about why your life feels so off, maybe it's because like you're living like a child, not a man.
Yes.
And I thought about what does a man do? And in my head, a man followed Jesus. And I'm like, so many people have so many different answers to that question. What does it mean to be a man?
Yes.
But I just feel so grateful that one of the legacies my dad passed on was telling me that I should be in the word.
Yeah.
And showing me that that was a thing, you know?
Thank you for the encouragement. I think it's kind of it's important and it's really interesting because it kind of feels like benign almost, like I'm telling him these things and he's not actually very impressed with these pieces of information. He's kind of like, I'm not like, son, you don't realize what I'm giving you. Do you
That's
understand?
That's what's so beautiful. To him, it just sounds normal right now.
Yeah. He's like, well, okay.
He's only going to later learn that this was radically different advice than much of the world.
Yeah. And even the details of like, hey, you have a phone, but here's some of the policies on that. Right. Like, and then also the next level of like, even just this last week, he got his first job. I was telling him first job. This was actually really fun. This is a fun, like, man thing to do, especially at this stage. But it's, and this has been fun to like give this to my son and see him just step into it. And this can be obviously true of your daughters too, but he's at the age where he can embody it and do it. He was trying to get a job and his birthday is July 31st. And we said, listen, it's a lot easier to get a job when you're 16. So we will give you 30 days from the time you turn 16 till, you know, you have 30 days from that point. You can drive our cars. You can, you know, be on insurance. We'll pay for everything for 30 days. As you are actively looking for a job. If you do not have a job within those 30 days, you will not be using our cars and you will not be using our insurance and you'll be having to get carted around like you did when you were 15.
That's amazing.
And this was primarily not to be rude, but to just say we had to put skin, like give him a challenge, right? I wanted him to have a challenge to be like, dude, get a job. Cause we are living in this stage right now where so many kids can just float off of what their parents want and they think they're giving their kids a gift. And I think, man, I'm not,
that's a curse.
Dude,
I got some words on this, but you finish first.
Well, and it was a similar deal during the school year. He was like, he's smarter than he was putting effort into. And we're looking at his grade average. We're like, bro, listen, I know that you're just simply not trying. This isn't an intelligence issue. This is a work issue.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. If you can get this grade average, we are going to give you $1,500 towards your first car. But I'll tell you this, if you're 1 point off of that average, we're not paying a dime.
Good.
But if you do, I'm going to help invest into your future, right? Yeah. So he had a major goal. He hit it.
He hit it.
And then we're 10 days into this 30-day stretch of getting a job. And it's a Saturday morning. He comes out. Elizabeth and I are sitting outside talking. I was like, son, so how are you doing on the job hunt? And he's like, I got an application in here, one over here. I was like, okay. So, and I kind of was like a little, like chiding him a little bit. Like, dude, do you understand? Like you have to turn in like 15 applications. You don't know if you're going to get job. What are you talking about? Like why are you leaning on this confidence that you're going to get one? He's like, oh, so he's kind of irritated. He's like, I'm going to go drop off one of my applications. I was like, where? He's like, at this taco shop. I was like, okay, but here's what I want to tell you. If you meet the manager, I want to tell you something that's going to go way further and speak to this generation way more than to your generation.
Let's go.
You shake that man's hand firmly. You look in his eyes and you let him know when he's asking you questions. You let him know that you are a hard worker. And even though you don't have experience, you're very willing to figure it out and you will do whatever it takes to make the job happen.
I mean, give me some,
you know, yes. And so this is the language that will unlock whoever you're talking to's ears to know that you are not the typical kid that's just going to like, you know, phone it in and wants the money. He's not going to do the work. If I was that guy, I'd be like, yeah, I want to hire that kid.
Yeah, you weren't right now. I'm going to fire one of my 30-year-olds because he's not doing it.
This is exactly what happened. So he leaves. Elizabeth and I are kind of disappointed. We're like, gosh, is he ever going to get is he going to get a job? Like, I don't know. We're kind of holding the tension. He comes back 20 minutes later. 20 minutes. I was like, son, what happened? Like, did you drop off our application? And he's like, no, I got a job. And I was like,
at the taco shop? Dude, you're good.
Dude,
you're really good. No,
this is what happened. This is the best part. He comes in and he couldn't wait to just like, you know, just be like, yeah, I told you, you know, like kind of that
job in 20 minutes.
No, this is what happened. So the story goes, he walks in, he has his application and no, it turns out he had turned in his application. He was going in to follow up and he just said, hey, is the manager here?
Brilliant.
Yeah. He went in and said, hey, I turned in my application the other day. Just wanted to follow up on that. And he shook his hand, eye contact, the whole thing. And the guy's like, you got 5 minutes right now for an interview? And he's like, I've got nothing going on. Like, no problem. So he sits him down and does like a quick 10-minute interview.
That's awesome.
Asks him a handful of questions. He does great on the answers. He's like, well, do you want to start working tomorrow? And he's like, I would love to. Like,
that is awesome.
Gets a job in, dude, like, you know, 10, literally 10 minutes. I'm sharing that long story just to give an example of like, I think for me, and just the reminder, even like you're highlighting, it's like that stuff is so, it's so easy actually to pass on. It's not really that hard, especially.
But it's so hard if no one passes it on to you.
Yes, exactly.
Your life becomes so hard.
So hard. I had some, but not a lot of that. And so a lot of that came from like, for me, like, who would I want to hire? what would I expect in a kid if I was trying to, if I owned a restaurant or whatever.
Right.
And so we just kind of, you know, in that space of challenging him, dude, he owned it. And it was so cool for him.
Yeah.
And also cool for me to be like, see, dude, I'm like, when you understand what you're stepping into and you follow the way of wisdom.
Oh my gosh.
Dude, it happens. So anyway, this is
another huge one. So I really like doing what we've been doing, going through small things to realize you're actually teaching legacy.
Yeah.
Okay. A huge issue right now. A huge issue. I was actually just talking to, I'm going to keep this confidential, but yeah. I was talking to somebody about this.
Yeah, sure.
Kids not getting their licenses, mm-hmm. not leaving the house, not knowing how to get a job. So they're stuck. They're 30 years old.
Good.
Boys in men's bodies.
Yep, yep.
Or girls in women's bodies living at home. And that is so destructive to your children.
Yeah.
So literal conversation at my family dinner table last week.
Okay.
It's just like literally what happened. It's kind of coincidental.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't planning on talking about this.
Yeah.
We had a conversation and my kids are 6, 8, 11, and 13, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I was literally at the dinner table. I was like, y'all know you can't live here after you graduate, right? And they scrunch their heads and they're like, I think I knew that. It's like, yeah. They're probably like thinking like, why aren't we talking about this?
Yeah.
But like, because I want them to intuit that what I'm doing is growing you up to become a man who goes out into the world and follows Jesus. And we literally continued that conversation. It started with, hey, y'all know you can't live here after you graduate, right? Now, we didn't temper that with saying, hey, if you're in a time of trouble, if you're in a transition, you know, all these things, you know. But I was like, it was a launching pad of saying,
do you realize
what's happening? And no, they don't realize what's happening, but I'm going to tell them anyway. I'm trying to teach you to grow up and follow Jesus. And there's some things that's going to mean.
Yeah.
That means that one, and these are things we didn't number them, but I was a couple of things I said. I was like, I expect y'all to stick together. Y'all are brothers.
Yeah.
Augustine has this great phrase for his monks. He was like, when you go out of the monastery, stay together. When you arrive at your destination, stay together.
Yeah.
And I tell my sons this all the time. When you go out of this house, whether it's riding your bike down the street, or whether it's you graduate and you know, you're off to college and you guys stick together.
Yes.
Okay. One of you is going to get broken up with and you're going to need to offer your brother a place on your couch to crash and talk out your sorrows. And if you have trouble finding a job, your brother's going to let you sleep at his house. You're not coming to my house. You guys are going to stick together. I expect you to stick together.
Yeah.
Second one, I was like, I expect you to find a wife, you know, and Lauren chimed in on this one. She was like, y'all need it. You're going to need it.
She's like, I know you.
But it was just, you know, laying down like, you know, I'm going to send you out of the house and I want you to find a godly, wonderful woman to marry, you know? And again, the 6 and 8 listening to this, do they understand? Of course not.
Yeah.
That's why I'm laying it down early. Like this is what, and I told them, you know, how we go to church every Sunday, you know, whether we want to or not, whether we're tired or not, whether you want to or not.
Dude.
It's because we're doing many other things, but one of the things we're doing is laying down a pattern of one of the most important things you're going to do when you leave this house is go find a local church community to root in. Because now you don't have this household anymore.
Yeah.
You're going to need a new community to root in. And the church is the first place you find that. And then we talked about getting a job and all this other stuff. And again, this is like Wednesday night family dinner at the early house. And this was probably like a 10 to 15 minute conversation full of, if they were older, they would have been groaning and rolling their eyes.
Yes, yes.
But they're young enough now. Again, families can make weird things normal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
And when you're talking to your kids about legacy stuff young, like, hey, I expect you to grow old, you know, have kids and get married and follow Jesus and get a job. Yeah. And this is actually what it looks like. You're laying down simple stuff. But to them, to the world on balance, this is huge stuff. Mm-hmm. Like the little things are the legacy things.
Yeah.
Teach them young and don't stop, you know?
Yeah. Oh, dude, I want to reflect. That is so helpful. And I agree that our children will become who we tell them we see them becoming.
Mm-hmm. It's part of the blessing, right?
It's part of the blessing.
Speaking the future.
Speaking life. Yeah. And so I think by you even saying that, what it does, whether they know it or not, is it actually wells up in them to be this type of person that lives this out. And again, intuitively, like just start to know, like, no, that's what men do. That's what we do in the home. And I think this is a little different for, you know, I'm trying to think of, it's very easy with my son because he's a male, because of his personality, because of his strength in the world to just be declarative and vision casting and then, you know, support them and send them.
Yeah.
It has to happen. Yeah. Boys, dude,
they need to be challenged, called for.
They need their skin in the game, man.
Mothering a 7-year-old when they're 16, you're going to mess them up. He needs to be challenged, initiated.
That's exactly what's happening. And so, but I would just say as I have three daughters, I'm finding it's a different type.
Yes.
Because
you're on point here. Everything I just said. Fathers of daughters and mothers of daughters you're gonna have to adapt.
You have to adapt, but I want to just say, like, it's gonna feel a little different to your daughters if you're like, women, I encourage you,
you know,
find a strong male with a successful job. There's a weird line there, but yes. I think the point being that it is setting the tone in your home of what you expect, because I think with my daughters, it's more like curious questions, like, hey, do you ever want to be married?
Do
you want to have kids someday? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And what's funny is I never put pressure on my daughters. Like, there's a lot, like two of them right now are like, I'm never having a baby. It's going to hurt ever. I was like, that's totally fine.
Fine and a normal thing to think.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally understand. That's something you and your husband can decide when you're married. Like, you know, it looks more like that. I'm like, I think I'd be scared of the whole idea if I understood it fully at your age. Like, I would be very scared. Yeah. Like, so anyway, you know, I don't. It's fun because with Duke, I'm that same way.
Yeah.
And with my daughters, I feel like it's a little bit different of a nuance.
Because, I'm really glad you're nuancing. Yeah.
Well, just simply because it is like, and especially as a dad, you hold so much weight, but my job, even with my girls, is showing them that there is safety and there is security in the male part of this home and that there's trust and that you want to find a man that does these types of things. And so it's almost even reinforcing the type of person they're looking for.
Oh man.
And I expect you can't live here. That idea looks more like we're going to help you thrive.
Mm-hmm.
Because anytime, like say like as a boy and as a man personally, but as a young boy and as a man like myself, I would hear that and go, yeah, I can't live here. I want to figure it out. A girl might hear that as rejection.
Yes, yes. I think it's really good.
It's such an interesting thing because you say the same thing in the same heart and it's like received differently, and this is where it's...
Oh, no. I mean, I think I'm smart enough to know that if I had daughters at that table, I would not have had that conversation. No,
I'm jealous that you get to have it so directly. I'm actually, like, part of me was like, man, it'd be so cool to be like, girls, we're out of here. Get out of the house.
You can't live here, right?
I would have been like, baby,
I hope you stay here forever.
And I think that's the other part. Like, you heard the voice memo from Sloan, my youngest daughter.
I told you, I was like, I'm so jealous you get memos like this.
I get voice memos like that. Daddy, I love you. I can't wait to hug you and I can't wait to see you. Like, it's different on that front because they're like, you know, they're like these little versions or these little ladies that there's a natural, especially as a dad, you're wanting to protect and you want to pass legacy to your daughters as a father in a different way through security, through example, through showing what it looks like to be a strong man, to have strength under control. Oh, I don't always do this well, by the way. But I think that is the goal with our men, with our boys, it's to challenge them to live into it and to live up to it and to live it out and to help them do it. With our daughters, it's similar, but it looks very different in the sense that we want to help them be as successful as they feel called to be, just like our boys. But at the very same time, how we get to that end is going to be different.
Yeah.
So anyway, we need to move on to a few things before we close this season out. But
yes,
lots of things. We've been going all over the place. I love it.
Wait, because I want to talk about technology as ritual.
Oh, yeah. Let's go.
On ordinary things being opportunities for extraordinary legacy moments.
Yes.
I think we both agree giving your kids a phone is a major moment.
Yes.
Maybe more important now than driving or first kiss or first job or. So I just think a lot about don't squander this moment.
Yeah.
Don't just throw a smartphone at them in sixth grade because they saw an Apple commercial and they want one for Christmas.
And their friend likes it.
Or so-and-so has one. You need to see a smartphone as a ritual of adulthood, which means two things. One, you don't give children portals into the adult world. It's just very unhelpful. And we've lived like in a confusing time where it's been normal. I think it's rapidly becoming not normal, which I'm really...
Grateful for.
Yes. A lot of our practical points on this at hangtenmovement.com. We're in the school of thought. Laura and I joked that we started a movement to justify not giving our kid a smartphone so that we could tell him and his friends, no, you're not going to get it until you're 16. Because 10th grade, 16 is not only when your brain is actually starting to become mature enough to deal with this stuff, but also when you're at a point of life of driving and friendships. Mm. And a lot of things have already happened.
Very natural.
Yeah, yes. It might be the right time to have it. Some people might want to wait longer, but don't do it earlier. And that opportunity can be a time to talk about so many virtues and ethics. For example, so we just gave Wit a dumb phone because he's in eighth grade. And, okay. And he knows he's not going to get a smartphone until 10th grade when he's 16. But he's 13 now. He needs a way to text and communicate with us, just call, receive calls, because he got so many practices. His friends are texting, and we do want him to be a part of that social life.
Train him, yeah.
With training wheels. And he was mad about the blue bubble thing too, you know?
Dude,
this is
real.
A big deal for
it's
kids.
It's real.
But you gotta, I'm of the opinion, like, you gotta push back on that. These are like kind of silly vanities, and I want agree. To raise a kid who has tough enough skin to have a green bubble in a world of blue bubbles. Like, okay.
So absolutely.
I was like, look, this is fine. But anyway, I post about this. You can read it on hang10movement.com or on Instagram. I share videos about this technology stuff, but we just gave him a list of 10 things. Some of which were like, hey, if you're old enough to have a phone, even a dumb one, you're old enough to be in the Word before you get on that phone. Mm. Okay. So you can either do your quiet time at night or in the morning, but it needs to be part of your daily rhythm. We talked about how I'm going to be looking at that phone. We can see everything in this phone, right? Yeah. I'm not going to share device types because honestly, I don't think there's any perfect one and there's a lot of good options and I don't want to preference one, but we have a phone that we can see into everything that's happening. And that was a moment for me to talk to him about, hey, as you become a man, you need light, you need transparency, you need accountability. The world of private browsing, the world of hidden lives, the world of secrets is not the world of walking with Jesus. And so we're going to make it normal. I do this with my friends, with your mom, like people can look at my phone. I'm going to be able to look at yours, you know, and you're teaching through little practical stuff of like, here's how this device works and here's how we're going to use it. You're teaching huge lessons of like Ephesians, walk in the light, you know? And I could go through all the things, but I don't want to. I just want to say, you should think about moments as mundane as giving your kid a technology device as actually extraordinary moments to talk about big life things and leave legacy.
Yes. Couldn't agree more. We actually originally had the rule of 18. I wanted him to be an adult before he got a smartphone. And
that's interesting. Yeah. Cause I kind of feel that's too late. They got to learn under your roof.
So,
or what do you think? Sorry.
We came to the same conclusion.
Okay.
We recognized really quickly that that's a great idea, but it doesn't do what you just said. And so we told Duke, hey, we're going to change our mind. When you're 16, it feels like a very normal time. Mm-hmm. This is what's going to look like. Similar thing. We can see everything in your phone. We have a bunch of screen time stuff. He doesn't have Safari. He can't download apps. Like, we have it set up in such a way that it is operationally more of a dumb phone, but it has all the has all the things that he needs. But I want to say that it's okay to change your mind. And I just want to say this. Justin, you said something really great. You shouldn't give your kids a smartphone until 16. I agree with you 100%. That's exactly what we did for all the reasons you said. And there's so much backing this now. It is silly. Anxious generation. Read it.
Yeah.
All the different stuff coming out. Read it. It's so real. But I want to say this. Some of you have already given your kids smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
And you are regretting it. You're hearing this and you're having the nudge in your spirit that says, I've already done it. It's too late. I can't undo this. And I just want to say, it doesn't make something better by keeping the wrong thing going.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have made a mistake and you have given your kid a phone too early, I think as a legacy lesson to your kids, it can look something like, hey, we have changed our mind about this. Because by the way, parents, it's okay to change your mind.
And by the way, it's a sign of grace in your life when you realize I've made a bad decision.
Yes.
I need to fix it.
And you can, what a life lesson for your kids.
Yeah.
To say, hey, I made a bad decision. I know this is hard, but we don't see this being good for you. And we don't think that this is going to be the best thing for you to grow. My job is to help you know how to move through the world and flourish. Mm-hmm. And this is not going to help you
That's
do
all
that. Right. And so you tell them that and you apologize and you own the fact that you made the mistake. And then you move to the next thing. So therefore, we're going to take the phone. We're going to make it. We're going to change it. We're going to, you know, do what you need to do. But I just want to give you permission. You can do that. There's framework for that. There's framework for them to be disappointed. It's okay for your kids to be disappointed. It's okay for your kids to be mad at you. Mm-hmm. It's okay for your kids to be like, they gave me a smartphone and then they took it away. Yes, you did, because you didn't fully understand the situation. Now you do, and you've made it a change.
Right,
but just keeping it because it's uncomfortable to deal with the problem is not the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to highlight that, because I think you and I have landed in that same space differently, but actually the same spot, because it felt very natural with Duke. It's like, no, I want him to have the skills in my home before he leaves it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of came to that conclusion on our own. But then as we've been in it, I'm like, no, this is very much the right time.
Yeah.
Because we're already like, hey, bro, people over phone, you know, like here's the etiquette. Here's, you know, teaching him all the things that he kind of, because now he has a phone that's interesting. Before it was not interesting.
Right.
Anyway.
It's a great opportunity. Yeah. I got two more ideas to leap. And these are kind of like, these will start to zoom us out.
Yeah.
If that's okay. So like the big picture.
Yes. I was going to say, let's go there as we end this episode.
Yeah. I'm specifically thinking of men and boys here. And I think it's helpful because we're thinking about fathers and talking to fathers. Calling them into manhood is a big part of leaving your legacy. Because when you say to your child, I want to teach you to be a man that follows Jesus, there are so many questions you have to then answer about what is a man?
Mm.
Does it mean to follow Jesus? And I have found rituals to be helpful to mark these moments.
Yes.
So one little one was when Whit turned 13, was to give him a Bible and a journal and say, you're beginning the journey to manhood. You need two things to be a man. You need to know God. You need to know yourself. The Bible's for the first, journal's for the second. This is what a man does. You know, a man reads the Bible and a man reflects. Mm. There are many other things a man does, but these two are pretty close to the foundation.
Yes.
I think that level is, I think that probably equates perfectly fine to daughters too, that one. Another thing we did that was really neat. And I think I'm curious to see where this goes. Was we just got a couple of our 13-year-olds, some were 14 actually, together. And we did a night of just dads and sons camping. So we went out to a place 30 minutes west of Richmond, and we gave them each a hatchet. Now, it was actually presented by one of their quote unquote honorary uncles, who's just a close friend of mine, Matt, whose kids are like 7, 5, or 7, like 3 and 1, actually. He has littles. But he wanted to come because we wanted like sort of uncles to be a part of this. And we gave him a hatchet. Matt actually presented it. And we had a lot of conversation, but Matt actually gave a great little speech about how we're trying to initiate you into manhood. And it is kind of like this hatchet. It can be an incredibly powerful tool for surviving, creating life, making fires, creating hospitality. Can also be a very dangerous weapon if you do not learn how to wield it.
Wow.
And if you wield it the wrong way, it will kill you or others. And he had much more, you know, he's eloquent. He's also an Eagle Scout and in the Navy and good camper and all that.
Yes. Yeah,
so he's the right guy to give this lesson.
Yes.
But we told them, and I tell my sons this all the time. And I tell other people this all the time. One of the most dangerous things in the world is a boy in a man's body.
Yes.
And I tell them, you don't become a man by getting older. You don't become a man by getting bigger. You become a man by starting to act like one. And then come all the questions, what does it mean to act like one? And I'm like, that's what these years are about. From 13 till I send you out of the house, I intend to send you out of the house as a man who knows how to walk with Jesus, who knows how to love, who knows how to use a phone, who knows how to drive, who knows how to get a job, who knows how to have a quiet time, all these things we're talking about. But that doesn't just happen to you.
Mm.
And neither does legacy just happen to us.
No.
It happens in these interactions where we stoop down to call them forward and mark moments in the woods or, you know, at the couch teaching about their phone. And by the way, we gave them those speeches. And then we said, part of your journey is actually, we're not staying with you tonight. We're leaving peace. You guys are staying out here alone tonight.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It was awesome.
What'd they do?
They loved it. Of course. They felt so big and cool.
So you guys, how far away were you guys?
We're just a couple lots. We stayed over at like a house at the edge of the woods.
Oh, so you guys were close, but they were
alone. There. They didn't have phones. You know, they knew they could make the, you know, 10-minute walk to find us if they needed. So
that is so cool.
Yeah. I mean, I would have been willing to go farther because these are 13, 14-year-olds.
Yeah.
They're going to be okay. Yeah. Something goes wrong. They're going to hike their way out and figure it out. And guess what? If we don't let them start to have those kinds of risks and bear those kinds of responsibilities, then they won't know how to take risks or bear responsibilities. Good. And we'll put boys in men's body. And we know what that does to the world.
Oh, dude.
It's boys in men's bodies hurt themselves and destroy others.
Yes.
And Jesus followers can't do that.
No.
So we left him in the woods and, you know, this is just the beginning, right?
But I love this.
Little things are the big things. I think giving away your death, a big part of it is initiating legacy into the young.
I've really enjoyed this season of conversations. And, you know, this is, again, a framework of formation, discipleship, becoming more like Jesus. And hopefully this season's given you language. I pray this framework has helped you think about your life, your fatherhood, your marriage. We have some fun bonus episodes that we're going to be releasing. And, you know, stay tuned for those because there's some special topics. But as far as this season goes, I just want to suggest, Justin, thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for the rich conversation. Thank you for the deposit into this community, into me as a friend. Being a constant learner helps me. You know, I'm in that same boat of having the passion to be a constant learner. And so it's so fun to have these conversations because I'm always learning, you know, from you in different ways. And so it's been a real treat to have this conversation and talk about the deep parts of our lives and hearts, things that we're good doing well and things that we're really not great at.
Amen.
Yeah.
It's been a joy. I love talking about this framing of time. And I just want to maybe give the obvious but really important reminder to everybody listening that none of this makes sense. Mm. None of this makes sense at all without the resurrection of Jesus Christ,
yes.
The Son of God.
Yes.
The Lamb that was slain. I mean, if you think about, we're assuming in so much of what we're saying, which I think is okay. People know what we're talking about. But listen. There's nothing redemptive about your death if Jesus did not die and rise again. Because it's just gone. Everything's gone. Like, there's no hope for you. It all burns out like a fire.
Yeah.
But when you see your life in terms of the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, that there is time, eternity to come, and that memento mori reminder of our death that will become resurrection in Jesus, just like he rose from his dead, and suddenly this becomes opportunity to say, well, life is worth getting together. And actually, it's worth giving away.
Mm.
And actually, now I can give my death away because I realize I only gain in doing that. None of this makes sense without the good news of Jesus Christ giving his life for us. So I just want everyone to go in that peace because that's the only way any of this makes any sense or how any of us have any hope.
Well said. Until next season, Justin.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been a great pleasure. See you guys soon.